10 years ago, physician Dr. Joe Hollowell, you actually was a state health officer in Kansas, many before you were born, I think, a few years ago. And I were asked by, we were at CDC and Center for Environmental Health to develop an activity aimed at supporting state and local and tribal environmental health programs, and that morphed into the Environmental Health Services Branch, and Dr. Buchanan became the branch chief of that branch, and now she's the division, the director of the Division of Environmental Health, Emergency and Environmental Health Services. But one of the things when we were starting ALET is was able to work, continue to work on that after I retired was this idea of environmental health and how can we improve the practice of environmental health. So what we're going to, what you'll hear today is how we went from that asking that question to developing a series of activities aimed at trying to improve the way environmental health is practiced. So first one we want to talk about is the need for environmental public health performance standards. And when I do these sessions, I always like to start with a definition of environmental health to make sure that the audience, especially if we have environmental health practitioners in there, understand why it is we do what we are supposed to be doing. So this came out of the Committee on the Future of Environmental Health that came shortly after the IOM report on the future of public health, and was chaired by Larry Gordon at the National Environmental Health Association. And they come up, the definition they came up with is the art and science of protecting against environmental factors that may adversely impact human health or the ecological balances essential to long-term human health and environmental quality, whether in the natural or human-made environment. So what I try to point out to the, again, audience, especially the practitioners, is that human health is in there, and that we're in the business of keeping people from getting sick or injured, and, of course, on the ecological balances part. It was so important. In some of the research, I've recently finished my doctorate, and I did it on these performance standards. And in researching, I came up with two key parts of the roots of environmental health. One was the sanitary movement of the late 19th century, when learned about the germ theory and understanding the relationship of the environment and bacteria to disease. And then the sanitary movement, which was related to trying to correct those conditions. So it was, as a graph here shows, in 1900, there was the rate of deaths due to infectious diseases was 800 per 100,000. And by the time penicillin was came on the scene in the 40s, the death rate due to infectious diseases decreased by 75%. And that was there's a lot of reasons why that happened, but it was a dramatic impact that environmental health, basic environmental health, had on the population. So what accounted for this big reduction? And it was a process. Of course, at that time we had sanitarians, we had sanitary engineers, we had physicians working in the field. It was a process of inspection, finding things wrong in the hygiene and sanitation, and then correcting those things, finding things wrong, inspecting, correcting, and we had an impact on the rate of death. Well, the outcome of all that is that for those of you who work in state or local tribal environmental health programs, I started my career in New Haven, Connecticut, and spent 19 years with the Indian Health Service. And we were very very much an inspection-based program. There were inspections became customary because that's the way we did things for decades, and it seemed to have an impact. We used to have a quota system. I think in most place jurisdictions, a quota system continues to exist. In Oklahoma, where I lived, it's depending on the size of the establishment, it's it could be up to four times a year. So what gets measured gets done. So if the staff says, I got to do 20 inspections this week, or the manager, then we go out and we do the 20 inspections. And then those quotas are used to evaluate the staff. And I did that myself. And you just measure base performance on how many things you did, not by how many things were improved or how health might have improved by doing those things. There also became a limited workforce preparation. And back in the early 70s, when I started in New Haven, there was eight sanitarians. I was the ninth, and the other eight high school high school degree, and in some cases just buddies with the mayor or something, and I'm sure that doesn't happen anywhere else, but there's that. So the workforce preparation was quite limited, even though there were schools of public health and there was sanitary science taught, but when it came to it was a bunch of inspectors that did things off a checklist and really didn't need a lot of preparation. Focus became, of course, was on infectious diseases, even though in the 60s, 50s, starting in the 50s, getting into the 60s and 70s, there were more other issues related to the environment that were non-infectious that they didn't recognize or chose not to recognize. It didn't fit the infectious disease model. Consequently, the EPA came into existence in 1970. With the EPA came a fragmentation of environmental health services or environmental health. In Oklahoma, for example, when about 12 years ago, they separated out the Department of Environmental Quality from the Health Department, and by statute, there's 10 different agencies and boards that deal with environmental issues. To me, is a good example of how fragmentation can impact or be affected by the creation of EPA. There's only 5 states where environment and health are together. Hawaii, North Dakota, Colorado. Is that where you're from? Colorado. Kansas and South Carolina. So the image I have in my mind is when I started up in Minnesota, and after ice out and snow melts, is if you're in a rut, you don't need to know where you're going. And you just put the wheels in the rut, and you just hit the accelerator, and you just go. So I see this as a lot of what's going on in environmental health over the last few years. So where are we? I'm trying to define where we are nationally. Not every jurisdiction is the same, but I think pretty much we can say this is very common, is that our emphasis in environmental health at the local level, especially in health departments, is on enforcement rather than prevention. And we have a lot of emerging problems for which many of our staff are unprepared, ill-prepared, especially most of the emerging issues disease-wise have been basic public health or environmental health issues, whether it's hantavirus, E. coli, 157, cryptosporidium, West Nile, those kind of things. But now we have more with the issues around terrorism, bioterrorism, climate change, natural disasters. Those are issues for which most of the workforce is ill-prepared in environmental health to deal with. And also very stovepipe. Some of the responses I ended up going on in whether floods or hurricanes is sanitarians, some of whom just did food, didn't know anything about how to deal with housing that flooded or wells that may have been contaminated. You had to go talk to the well guy over there. Well, the well guy didn't know anything about the food. So there's the cross-training and doesn't exist as much as it used to. And there is this disconnect between health and environment. In Oklahoma, for example, the word health appears nowhere in any of the literature in the Department of Environmental Quality. So if the word health comes up, so it's a health department. That's the DEQ over there. So they go over this way and nobody talks. So the data aren't shared and one doesn't know what the other one's doing. And I think that's repeated in more than one jurisdiction. We measure, like I said earlier, the number of activities, but what we don't ask is what's been accomplished by doing those activities. So we were seen as a bunch of inspectors. Go out there and you inspect. Well, what does that take? You just make a list, find things wrong. It's a bit of an adversarial relationship, but we do very little to measure outcome. So I see this as, in my experience in managing some programs, is that I sense a lost sense of purpose. When I worked on Navajo, I had a staff of 45, and some of the staff said, I don't know why we keep doing these inspections. You just go in there, same thing happens every time. I just could change the date on there, give you guys the report. I mean, it was so bad that with Indian Health, we did, for example, Head Start's inspections. Used to have to do an inspection, send 3 copies into the headquarters in Rockville, Maryland. And one of my friends became the director there. He said, Pat, I wonder what we did with those 3 copies. So first sets came in. I asked the secretary, what do we do with the 3 copies that come in? So, well, we take one, we send it to the Head Start program. Second one we put in a file, and the third one we throw it away. Was the response. So lost sense of purpose, just did things for the sake of doing it. So when thinking about this with several colleagues, we asked about the question about where we need to be. So when the IOM report came out, we had these core functions of public health that we decided, well, those core functions really do apply to environmental health, assessment, policy development, and assurance. And we needed to have a system in place, whether locally or nationally, if you tie them all together, that's able to anticipate, recognize, evaluate, and control environmental-related problems. The needs, the group, the whether it's the workforce or the infrastructure, the programs need to be prepared to face challenges that are going to come in environmental health, whatever they may be. That's the anticipation part. And that we needed, if we're hiring people, in some of the work I did, we estimated, say, 30,000 people working in environmental health at the state and local level in public health, not DEQ-type stuff, EPA-type stuff. And about 40% are at or near retirement age. So there's going to be a gap. We need to hire about 12,000 entry-level environmental health people in health departments. In our accredited environmental health programs, we put out about, I think we said, what, about 300 that go into health, public health. You know, another large percent go into the private sector. But we put out about 300. And the graduates from these accredited and undergraduate programs really know what they need to do in environmental health, need very little additional training or education in the work that they need to do. So that's a 12,000 divided by 300. I mean, if there's a 40-year, take 40 years to fill it at that rate. So what we said was a clear description of what we do in environmental health, and that would help with any education or training of the people coming into the workforce without being formally trained in either environmental health or public health. As an aside, when I did my research, there were 61 environmental health people in the counties working in Oklahoma that I studied. Not one of them, out of the 61, not one had formal training in public health. There's not one with a master's of public health, and it was rare to find one with a degree in environmental health science. So nationally, we looked at the need to build consistency in environmental health services, capacity, and accountability for the work that's done. Yes, sir?
So how do you think REHS
I think it's one measure of having someone that has at least passed the test, that you know that they have some basic knowledge of environmental health. That's what, now, having an RS and what impact that has on the effectiveness of environmental health program, I'm sure as a measure. But I think you're way ahead, because some states don't require registration, and I think they're probably not as well served as those that have a requirement. All right, and pursuing this on where we need to be, there, of course, were the essential public health services that were developed to define or describe what it meant to meet the three core functions of public health. So we worked on developing essential services for environmental health, and those were developed, and as a way of describing what should be done in environmental health programs. Then CDC worked on these national public health performance standards that were developed several years ago, and they went even further in describing what needed to be done in health departments in this public health system to meet the essential services of public health. So then, as part of my research and working with Dr. Buchanan and her branch, was to have a national environmental public health performance standards project. That was taken on to further describe and get in a little more detail what should be going on locally in environmental public health. So part of the problem, the statement, and what we needed to do was we had these national public health performance standards that were out there, but we really didn't know the extent to which those performance standards assess the capacity of local environmental health programs to perform the essential environmental health services. Now, I don't know, does anyone use those national public health performance standards? Okay, it's a bear of a, it's about, the first version was 600 and something questions. I think they got it down to 400 and something questions. But
in part, it's our assessment.
So, yeah, and it's a good assessment tool. But does a high score or fully meeting those performance standards, meaning that you have an effective environmental health program, was unknown. So that was some of what I wanted to research. One of the questions was, is there an association between the national public health performance standards and an accepted set of environmental public health performance standards? And if there is, what's the significance and predictability? So that's wanted to set the ground, figure out if we really did need a set of performance standards for environmental health. So some of what I did, develop a set of performance standards using Jerry Barron, and Sharunda was involved with this, but it was a technical assistance or a panel of experts, nine of us that helped. I drafted them all, and they reacted to them. We ended up with 10 standards, but based on each of the essential services, 55 indicators, and 60 questions, which we thought was a doable number of questions. And I took the instrument and applied it in 56 counties in Oklahoma that had completed the national public health performance standards in back in 2002, and then compared the results from both the national public health performance standards and the environmental standards. And I don't have... Just some of the real basic stuff. This chart lists, or by color, the score. So the scoring was from 0 up to 25 was not met, which is indicated by the kind of like the purple color, I guess, there. And the maroon color was low partial, which was a score of 25 to less than 50. And the yellow was a high partial, was over 50 to up to 75, and then the what would you call that, teal, I guess, was meeting the standard. So one to look at is that kind of purple color, and you can see that the first standard, which deals with monitoring health status, was low for almost half of the counties. And we see on the third one there about informing the public about these conditions, they scored pretty low, as did both mobilize and policy development. And then further to the right, we see the evaluation was, it's about a third of them got was not met, and the one on research, the last one, wasn't met by about half of them. So the average. So the average overall was a low partial. So they didn't, on these performance standards, they weren't meeting them as the scores weren't as high as they might have liked.
On the enforcement, that just blows me away. Why wouldn't it be? I just would think they could almost all keep.
Well, yeah, you would think that, but. There was some gaps in some of what they needed to do, and it gets into it's the inspection, but what's these essential services shouldn't be handpicked one at a time. If you start with the first one, go all the way through. So it's the relationship of what the needs are in the community as to what the policy development and enforcement might be. So is there a link, a match, or a link between what they identify as the problems with what policies are should be to address those problems, and then the enforcement to that. So a lot of the food, and in Oklahoma they do food and then swimming pools and hotels, motels. But then there's also that enforcement dealing with other, if they find problems in dealing with other agencies, there's a weakness in there too. Now in the comparison between the National Environmental Health Performance Standards and the Environmental Public Health Performance Standards, the dark in black is the Environmental Public Health Performance Standards, and the gray is the National Public Health Performance Standards. And there were these are average scores for the 56 counties. So there was a significant difference in the average scores under diagnosing the problem. So the on the environment side, they scored lower, significantly lower than what the health department or the national standards were. They scored difference was significant at the inform on the third one there. So the environmental health didn't, as far as informing the public and about the problems, was not as high as it was in the health departments. And then we get out to workforce preparation, which is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the 8th one. I don't have a pointer. But the workforce preparation was higher. They scored higher, significantly higher than in the National Public Health Performance Standard, which one would what might expect because of the nature of the work, and especially on the food side. And then as far as evaluation, and that's related back to the food protection program that they do a lot of, trying to meet the FDA standards for program standards for assessment evaluation. Sort of. So there's some differences, there's at least in four areas where there's some significant differences. So some of the key findings I want to go through real quick is the capacity for these programs to provide the essential environmental public health services was limited based on their self-scoring, self-assessments. However, the capacity to provide those essential environmental health services was generally higher than the capacity to perform the essential public health services. So it seemed like the environment side was doing a little bit better. And there was very weak, extremely weak correlation at about 0.3 between the environmental public health and national public health. Another finding was that the national public health performance standards did not adequately assess the capacity of local environmental health programs to perform the essential environmental health services, and that several barriers were identified as that influenced that outcome. And some of those barriers included one would probably predict, but the preparation or education or training around these essential services and funding was an issue on some, not enough money or time to do it. And as I said earlier, lack of formal public health training. It was amazing. Out of 61-0 with a master's in public health, and I found that striking. And this field staff was relatively young with limited experience. About half had less than 10 years experience, and extremely young, and a lot of us in the field, we learn from other people on the job training, and if that person wasn't schooled or formally trained, then we're going to learn their bad habits. I think that shows. So our recommendations was that the Environmental Public Health Performance Standard should be adopted as a method of measuring the capacity to perform essential environmental health services. And that staff should be trained on both the performance standards and best practices. And in completing these standards, a gap analysis should be completed and an action plan drafted to address whatever gaps might exist. And that part of this research was that the standards that I developed with the advice of the panel was that they could be a starting point for national standards, and we're beginning to that. And the last recommendation is that research, once we get these standards to the point where they're being used, is to determine their effectiveness in actually reducing or preventing illness, which I don't think has been done with a national public health performance standards. The value of these is, to me, they provide a clear sense of purpose to the people doing the work, especially if they haven't been exposed to what environmental health is about. That it describes and can enhance the perception of what an environmental health program is all about. It can assist with budget justification, trying to meet these standards, can be applied to either a system or an environmental health system that crosses different agencies, or it could be a specific program like food or water. And it can be used to orient new and existing staff. So that was the basis or background or justification for